Chapter 1. Variation under domestication. The architecture of possibility. Charles Darwin opened on the origin of species with a seemingly mundane observation. Domestic pigeons come in astonishing variety. From the puffed-out crop of the pouter to the tumbling flight of the tumbler, from the fantail's extravagant plumage to the carrier's distinctive beak, these birds display differences so extreme that any naturalist encountering them in the wild would classify them as distinct species. Yet all descended from the common rock dove, Columba livia. Darwin saw in this variation the key to understanding nature's creativity. He meticulously documented how breeders, through patient selection across generations, could stretch and reshape living forms. His argument was revolutionary. If human selection could produce such dramatic changes in mere centuries, then natural selection, operating over geological time, could account for all of life's diversity. But hidden within Darwin's careful observations lies a pattern he documented without fully theorizing. The pigeon fancier doesn't create variation by removing constraints, quite the opposite. The breeder substitutes nature's constraints with artificial ones. Controlled mating replaces natural mate choice, protected coops replace predation pressure, selective feeding replaces resource competition. Each substitution doesn't free the organism from limitation, but rather reconfigures the system of constraints within which variation unfolds. This book offers a reinterpretation of Darwin's masterwork through the lens of constraint as creative force. We'll follow Darwin's original structure and examples, but with three distinct layers of analysis. What Darwin wrote, his explicit arguments about variation, selection, and descent with modification, the foundation of evolutionary theory that transformed our understanding of life. What his examples show, the implicit patterns in his meticulously gathered evidence, patterns that reveal how constraints operate but which Victorian science lacked the conceptual framework to fully articulate. What the constraint lens reveals, how viewing these same phenomena through the principle that constraints create rather than merely limit offers fresh insights into evolution's creative power. This reinterpretation centers on a key distinction. Every organism navigates two types of constraint spaces. Internal constraints include all inherent limitations and possibilities: metabolic needs, developmental pathways, genetic architecture. External constraints encompass all environmental pressures: climate, predators, food sources, social structures. Evolution occurs at the intersection where internal potential meets external reality. Domestication, as we'll see, works by systematically replacing natural external constraints with artificial ones while revealing the vast internal potential normally hidden by survival demands. This isn't an attempt to discover what Darwin really meant or to claim he anticipated modern complexity theory. Darwin was a careful empiricist who theorized what his evidence supported. But by examining his evidence through a new interpretive framework, one informed by contemporary understanding of how simple rules generate complexity, we can see how his examples demonstrate principles that extend beyond his original theoretical framework. Consider again those pigeons. Darwin noted how the short-faced tumbler's beak had become so reduced that fanciers must assist in hatching, breaking the shell that the weak beak cannot penetrate. He saw this as evidence of how far selection could push variation. But through the constraint lens, we see something more, a constraint boundary being reached, beak functionality, that creates a new constraint relationship, human intervention in hatching. The system doesn't break, it reconfigures, incorporating new elements to maintain viability while continuing to explore morphological space. Throughout this reinterpretation, we'll maintain strict clarity about these three layers. When Darwin writes of unconscious selection by breeders who simply prefer certain traits, we'll note his insight while also exploring how this preference creates a new constraint landscape that channels variation in ways that neither breeder nor bird intends, but which nonetheless generates novel forms. The story that emerges is not one of life breaking free from limitation, but of evolution as the universe's most sophisticated engine for reconfiguring constraints to explore the space of possible forms. Darwin showed us that species are not fixed types but flowing patterns in the river of descent with modification. The constraint lens reveals the hidden architecture of that river, how its banks and channels, far from limiting the flow, create the very conditions for life's endless creativity. The pigeon fancier's paradise, a three-layer analysis. What Darwin wrote. Darwin devoted extraordinary attention to pigeons, keeping his own breeds and corresponding with fanciers across Britain. He documented at least a dozen distinct breeds, the English carrier with its wonderfully elongated beak and large nostrils, the short-faced tumbler with its beak so reduced it resembled a finch, the pouter with its enormously inflated crop, the fantail with up to 42 tail feathers where the ancestral rock dove has 12. His argument was straightforward yet revolutionary. These breeds, if found wild and presented to an ornithologist, would be classified not merely as separate species but likely as separate genera. Yet Darwin marshalled three lines of evidence for their common origin. All breeds could interbreed freely producing fertile offspring. Historical records showed several breeds arising within recent centuries, and most tellingly, when crossed, the breeds often reverted toward the blue coloration and wing barring of the wild rock dove. Darwin used these facts to establish two critical principles. First, that enormous variation could arise from a single ancestral form through selection. Second, that this variation, while dramatic in appearance, remained constrained by underlying hereditary connections. What he called reversion demonstrated that the ancestral pattern persisted beneath the surface modifications. What his examples show. Darwin's meticulous documentation reveals patterns beyond his explicit theorizing. Consider his observation that pigeon fanciers often couldn't articulate exactly what they sought in an ideal bird, yet their consistent choices over generations produced remarkably uniform breeds. He called this unconscious selection, breeders simply keeping the birds they liked best. But examine what actually happens in a pigeon loft. The fancier controls mating, feeding, protection from predators, treatment of disease, even which eggs hatch. The rock dove's natural constraints, finding food, avoiding hawks, competing for mates, surviving weather, are systematically replaced with artificial ones. The fancier doesn't remove constraints but substitutes an entirely new constraint regime. Moreover, Darwin noted how different breeds excelled under different management systems. The carrier pigeon thrived with exercise and long flights. The short-faced tumbler required careful handling and protection. Each breed hadn't just developed different physical traits but different constraint dependencies, their viability intertwined with specific human practices. What the constraint lens reveals. Through the constraint lens, pigeon breeding demonstrates three fundamental principles that Darwin documented but didn't fully theorize. Constraint substitution creates new possibility spaces. When fanciers remove natural predation, they don't create unconstrained pigeons. Instead, they substitute human aesthetic preference for survival pressure. This new constraint, arbitrary from nature's perspective, opens morphological territories that natural selection would never explore. The fantail's 42 tail feathers would doom a wild pigeon, but in the constraint landscape of the pigeon loft, they become a viable, even prized, variation. Internal potential revealed through external substitution. The profound insight hidden in Darwin's examples is that domestication reveals pre-existing internal potential by altering external constraints. Every pigeon contains the genetic and developmental machinery to produce fans, pouters, tumblers, and carriers. But natural external constraints, predation, foraging efficiency, mate competition, keep these possibilities suppressed. The pigeon fancier doesn't create new internal potential but unveils what was always there. By substituting artificial external constraints, protection, feeding, controlled mating, previously lethal internal variations become viable. The grotesque forms of fancy pigeons represent not new inventions but ancient potential, written in the flexible developmental programs of all pigeons, finally given external conditions where they can manifest. This explains why domestic varieties often seem to exceed the limits of variation seen in nature. It's not that domestication breaks natural laws, but that it creates novel intersections between internal and external constraint spaces, intersections that never occur in the wild but reveal genuine organismal potential. Constraints propagate through systems. Darwin carefully noted how selecting for one trait often brought unexpected changes in others. Select for a larger crop in pouters, and the vertebrae elongate. Select for more tail feathers in fantails, and the oil gland shrinks. He saw these as mysterious correlations of growth. The constraint lens reveals these correlations as constraint propagation. An organism is an integrated system where every change reconfigures the whole. Enlarging the crop creates new mechanical constraints on the spine. Additional tail feathers alter the metabolic constraints on oil production. What Darwin documented as correlation, we can understand as systematic constraint reconfiguration rippling through interconnected systems. Constraint boundaries generate innovation. Most revealing are Darwin's examples of breeds pushing against fundamental constraints. The short-faced tumbler's beak, selected to be ever shorter, eventually reaches a functional boundary. The birds cannot break out of their own eggs. But rather than ending the breeding program, this boundary creates a new constraint relationship. Human-assisted hatching becomes part of the breed's existence. This isn't failure, but system reconfiguration. The constraint boundary doesn't stop change but redirects it, incorporating new elements, human intervention, that allow continued exploration of morphological space. The system expands to include the breeder as an essential component, creating a human-pigeon symbiosis that enables forms impossible under purely natural constraints. Darwin saw in pigeons proof that selection could dramatically modify organisms. The constraint lens reveals something deeper. Evolution doesn't overcome limitations but continuously reconfigures them, creating new possibility spaces where novel forms can emerge. The pigeon fancier's loft isn't a place where constraints are lifted but where they are creatively rearranged, demonstrating in miniature how evolution explores the vast space of possible life. The art of selection, methodical, unconscious, and constrained. What Darwin wrote. Darwin distinguished between two modes of artificial selection with characteristic Victorian precision. Methodical selection occurred when breeders pursued a predetermined ideal. Robert Bakewell systematically breeding Leicester sheep for small bones and rapid fattening, or Lord Leicester spending decades perfecting his South Down sheep. These breeders kept careful records, selected specific crosses, and worked toward explicit goals. Unconscious selection, by contrast, happened when people simply saved the best individuals without any intention to alter the breed. Darwin noted how every farmer keeping the finest cattle for breeding, every gardener saving seed from the earliest peas, contributed to gradual change without plan or intention. Over centuries, such preferences transformed breeds as surely as methodical selection, though more slowly. Darwin emphasized that both forms required the same raw material, variation. If there were no variability, he wrote, nothing could be affected. He documented how breeders became exquisitely sensitive to minute variations invisible to casual observers. A slightly longer beak, a marginally curved tail feather, a faint difference in plumage pattern. The breeder's eye, trained to perceive these subtle differences, could guide selection along trajectories that accumulated into dramatic change. What his examples show. Darwin's contrast between methodical and unconscious selection reveals more than different breeding strategies. His examples show distinct patterns of constraint operation. In methodical selection, the breeder's mental image of the desired form creates what we might call a constraint attractor, a specific configuration toward which selection pulls the population. Bakewell's Leicester sheep weren't just selected for individual traits but for a complete constraint package: rapid growth, temporal constraint, small bones, structural constraint, and profuse fat production, metabolic constraint. The predetermined ideal orchestrated multiple constraints into a coherent whole. Unconscious selection shows a different pattern. When Darwin described villagers each keeping their best cow, he noted how local preferences created distinctive regional breeds without anyone intending to create a new variety. Each village's implicit standards, shaped by local climate, available feed, traditional uses, created a unique constraint environment. The resulting breeds reflected not individual intention but collective constraint patterns embedded in cultural practice. Most tellingly, Darwin observed that the power of selection depended entirely on control over breeding. A single farmer improving sheep meant nothing if those sheep interbred freely with inferior stock. Only when breeders could maintain reproductive isolation, through physical separation, controlled mating, or social conventions, could selection accumulate changes. The fundamental constraint wasn't the selection itself, but the ability to maintain breeding boundaries. What the constraint lens reveals. The distinction between methodical and unconscious selection illuminates different modes of constraint configuration. Explicit vs. implicit constraint targets. Methodical selection works by defining explicit constraint targets. Bakewell literally drew pictures of his ideal sheep. This creates what complexity theorists would recognize as a fitness landscape with a defined peak. All variation is evaluated against this predetermined constraint configuration. Unconscious selection operates through implicit constraint patterns embedded in daily practice. The best cow isn't defined by a blueprint but by an internalized sense emerging from countless small decisions about what to keep and what to cull. These implicit constraints, accumulated over generations, can create changes as dramatic as any methodical program, but through a fundamentally different process. Constraint evolution through cultural practice rather than constraint imposition through predetermined design. Constraint coherence through selection. Darwin noted that skilled breeders succeeded by selecting for multiple traits simultaneously, maintaining what he called the whole organization of the animal. The constraint lens reveals why organisms are integrated systems where changing one element reconfigures relationships throughout. Successful selection doesn't just accumulate desired traits but maintains constraint coherence, ensuring that metabolic demands match structural capabilities, that behavioral patterns align with physical form, that all parts work together as an integrated whole. Bakewell's genius wasn't just selecting for rapid growth, but understanding how to reconfigure the entire constraint system of the sheep to support that growth sustainably. Reproductive isolation as master constraint. Darwin's observation about the necessity of controlled breeding reveals a meta-principle. Selection can only create lasting change within bounded systems. The breeder's fundamental power lies not in choosing which animals to favor, but in creating and maintaining constraint boundaries that prevent the dissolution of accumulated changes. This principle extends beyond artificial selection. Every species represents a constraint boundary maintained by reproductive isolation. Whether through geographical barriers, behavioral differences, or genetic incompatibilities, these boundaries create spaces within which selection can accumulate changes without dilution. The art of breeding recapitulates nature's method, creating isolated constraint spaces where variation can explore new configurations. Darwin's careful distinction between selection types reveals selection itself as a constraint process. Whether methodical or unconscious, whether artificial or natural, selection works by creating and maintaining constraint configurations that channel variation along particular trajectories. The breeder's art lies not in overcoming natural limitations but in reconfiguring them, substituting human preference for environmental pressure, cultural practice for ecological niche, controlled mating for natural reproduction. In this light, artificial selection doesn't oppose natural selection but demonstrates its fundamental principle. Evolution proceeds through the creative reconfiguration of constraints. The breeder's success in transforming pigeons, sheep, and cattle proves not that organisms can escape their limitations, but that those limitations themselves can be reshaped to explore previously impossible forms. The garden as laboratory, constraint patterns in cultivated plants. What Darwin wrote. Darwin extended his analysis from animal breeding to cultivation, noting crucial differences. Plants, he observed, displayed even more dramatic variation under domestication than animals. The wild cabbage had given rise to forms as distinct as cauliflower, broccoli, Brussels sprouts, and kale. Strawberries had increased in size threefold. The common gooseberry had produced varieties with fruit differing in size, color, shape, and flavor to degrees that would mark distinct species in nature. He attributed this extraordinary plasticity partly to plants' different relationship with reproduction. While animal breeders must wait for sexual maturity and manage complex mating behaviors, plant cultivators could propagate through cuttings, grafts, and bulbs. This allowed them to preserve and multiply even the most extreme variations, sports and mutations that might never successfully reproduce sexually. Darwin particularly emphasized how cultivation revealed the hidden potential within species. The parsnip, barely edible in its wild form with a thin, acrid root, transformed under cultivation into a sweet, thick vegetable. He saw this not as humans creating new traits from nothing, but as cultivation revealing and amplifying variation that existed in potential within the wild ancestor. What his examples show. Darwin's plant examples demonstrate patterns distinct from animal breeding. When he described how cultivators could preserve monstrous flowers or seedless fruits through vegetative propagation, he was documenting a fundamental shift in constraint relationships. Sexual reproduction in animals maintains what we might call constraint continuity. Each generation must pass through the bottleneck of development from a single cell, ensuring that only constraint configurations compatible with complete development can persist. But vegetative propagation bypasses this bottleneck. A cutting carries the full developmental state of the parent, allowing constraint configurations that could never survive sexual reproduction to perpetuate indefinitely. His observation about plants' greater variability under cultivation reveals another pattern. Animals maintain behavioral and physiological constraints even in captivity. A cow still needs to walk, breathe, and maintain body temperature. But plants, being modular organisms, can tolerate more extreme constraint reconfigurations. A cauliflower's monstrous flower head, grotesquely enlarged and arrested in development, represents a constraint state that would be lethal in an animal but merely unusual in a plant. What the constraint lens reveals. Plant cultivation demonstrates three additional principles of constraint operation. Constraint bypass through alternative propagation. Vegetative propagation doesn't just preserve variations, it enables exploration of constraint spaces inaccessible to sexual reproduction. The seedless banana, propagated entirely through shoots, occupies a constraint configuration where the fundamental function of fruit, seed dispersal, has been completely reconfigured for human consumption. This isn't merely selection but constraint architecture redesign, creating organisms that exist only within human cultivation systems. Modular organization enables extreme reconfiguration. Plants' modular construction, repeating units of leaves, stems, and roots, allows for constraint reconfigurations that would destroy the integrated systems of animals. Brussels sprouts reconfigure leaf buds into edible spheres. Cauliflower transforms flower clusters into dense, undifferentiated masses. These changes work because plant modules can operate semi-independently, allowing local constraint changes without system-wide failure. Latent constraint spaces. Darwin's insight about cultivation revealing hidden potential points to a profound principle. Organisms carry latent constraint configurations that natural conditions never activate. The wild cabbage contains the developmental potential for cauliflower, but only human cultivation creates the constraint environment where this potential manifests. Evolution has produced organisms not just adapted to current conditions, but carrying vast libraries of possible constraint reconfigurations waiting for the right conditions to express. Conclusion: the creative power of constraint. Darwin began his great work with variation under domestication not merely as accessible evidence for evolution, but because it demonstrated evolution's fundamental mechanism in accelerated, visible form. Through pigeons and sheep, cabbages and gooseberries, he showed that organisms could change dramatically through selection acting on variation. But embedded in his careful observations lies a deeper pattern he documented without fully theorizing. Domestication doesn't work by removing natural constraints, but by systematically substituting them with artificial ones. The pigeon fancier replaces predation pressure with aesthetic preference. The plant breeder substitutes natural reproduction with vegetative propagation. The sheep breeder reconfigures metabolic constraints to prioritize rapid growth over long-term survival. These substitutions don't free organisms from limitation. They create new constraint regimes that open previously inaccessible regions of possibility space. The fantail's 42 tail feathers, the cauliflower's arrested inflorescence, the seedless banana's sweet sterility, none could exist under natural constraints, yet all emerge readily under artificial ones. Through the constraint lens, Darwin's first chapter reveals three fundamental insights. First, constraints create rather than merely limit. Every constraint substitution in domestication opens new territories for variation to explore. The breeder's art lies not in overcoming limitations, but in creatively reconfiguring them to enable novel forms. Second, organisms are integrated constraint systems. Darwin's mysterious correlations of growth reflect constraint propagation through interconnected networks. Change one element, and ripple effects reconfigure the whole. Successful breeding works with these systemic relationships, maintaining constraint coherence while exploring new configurations. Third, evolution is constraint space exploration. Whether through methodical selection's explicit targets, unconscious selection's implicit preferences, or vegetative propagation's developmental bypass, domestication reveals evolution's core process, the continuous reconfiguration of constraints to explore the vast space of possible forms. Darwin showed us that species are not fixed types but mutable forms shaped by selection. The constraint lens reveals the deeper architecture of this mutability, how life explores possibility not by escaping limitations but by continuously reconfiguring them. In the pigeon loft and the garden plot, we see evolution's creative engine in miniature, constraint systems exploring their own transformation, guided by selection but enabled by the fundamental principle that constraints don't just limit what is possible. They create the very conditions for novelty to emerge. As we follow Darwin into the wild in subsequent chapters, we'll see these same principles operating in nature, not the constraint substitution of domestication, but the constraint evolution of natural systems. The creative power of constraint, first visible in humanity's transformed breeds and cultivars, will reveal itself as the fundamental force driving life's endless innovation.